I wanted to ask him more. At least half of me did. The other half didn't really want to know. On top of the way Aaron had been responding to some of the things I'd said this week, it was obvious what he meant. Aaron was nowhere near loving me, never mind halfway there. Just then, with perfect timing, I heard someone calling across to us. I looked up. Aaron. He made his way over the road.
"There you are,"
he said, closing the gate behind him and joining us in Lyle's garden.
"I guess you couldn't sleep either."
"Hmm," I said. I couldn't speak. I could barely look at him. My cheeks burned as if there was a fire right in front of my face. I was in between like and love. Was I? Really? I mean, could you even love someone at my age? Especially when it was so obvious that they didn't feel the same way. He did at least like me, though, didn't he? I hadn't got that wrong.
"We were just talking about you,"
Lyle broke into my thoughts.
"Really? All good, I hope,"
Aaron said as he sat down next to me on the bench. "Hmm," I said again. Seriously, was this all I was going to be capable of uttering from now on?
"Just discussing our plan of action,"
Lyle said, saving me from the need for further explanation. He summarized what he'd told me about the slack tide and the reason why the ship was fading. Luckily, he didn't go into any more detail.
"So we have to act quickly,"
Aaron said.
"Yep," Lyle agreed. "And I've found out what we need to do. I believe that a portal will open early tomorrow morning on the high tide. It will be our one chance to reach the ship and bring it home."
"I'll do it,"
Aaron announced without a second's hesitation. Lyle laughed softly.
"I thought you'd say that,"
he said.
"But no, you can't. I'm going to figure out a way that I can get through it. I'm not letting either of you..."
"I'm doing it," I said firmly. Both of them turned to look at me.
"I'm going,"
I repeated. As I said it, I got a tingly, wriggly feeling in my stomach, as if a tiny octopus was tickling me with its tentacles. I know I should have been scared, but I was excited too. I was going to find a mythical portal. I was going to bring Luena back. I was going to go to Atlantis. Aaron held out a hand as if to stop me from literally running off to find the ship right then.
"No, Emily, it could be dangerous."
He glanced at Lyle.
"I mean, I think it could be. Is it dangerous?"
"Oh, yes," Lyle confirmed. "The dangers are plentiful and varied. The biggest danger of them all is the risk of getting across to the ship but never making it back again."
I swallowed. The tentacles in my stomach tickled harder. Being lost forever in Atlantis.
"Yes, that's why I'm not letting you go.
I'll think of something. We just need to work out together how."
"I'm going," I said. "I'm doing it."
"Emily, no," Aaron said again. "If anyone's doing it, I am."
Lyle stopped him.
"Aaron, you can't. Right now, Emily is the only one who could even attempt it."
Aaron glanced between the two of us.
"Why?"
he asked.
"How do you know?"
"Because I saw Luena," I blurted out before Lyle had the chance to say anything embarrassing. "Because I saw the ship more clearly. Guys, you know it's true. I'm the best hope of bringing Luena home." I looked from Aaron to Lyle. "I'm the only hope." Lyle dropped his head. He knew it was true. Aaron let out a hard breath.
"I go with you all the way to the portal,"
he said.
"I stay with you till you get across. I do everything I can to keep you from danger, okay? That's the deal."
I felt myself melt. I didn't care if he didn't feel the same way as me. At least he wanted to look after me. He was so lovely. He made me... wait. He was making my feelings stronger. I couldn't let that happen. What if I stopped being in between feelings? What if him being so lovely to me tipped the scales from like into love?
Aaron, don't be so soppy, I snapped,
my words not reflecting my feelings at all.
I'll be fine.
Lyle caught my eye. He knew what I was doing.
Emily, if you're absolutely determined...
I am.
Well then, we'll all do everything we can to keep you from harm, he said. But you need to think carefully about this. I can't ask it of you. I won't. It's not right for...
You're not asking it of me, I interrupted. I'm telling you, I'm doing it. I want to. I need to. I wasn't going to spell it out to Lyle, but I had to do this for myself almost as much as for him. It wasn't only that I seemed to be completely incapable of resisting an adventure. It also felt like the only way I was ever going to get Luenna's screaming eyes out of my mind.
Lyle swallowed hard. His Adam's apple bobbed up and down a couple of times before he spoke again.
Thank you, he said hoarsely.
He reached awkwardly for my hand and squeezed it. I didn't know what to say. I wasn't sure I'd be able to speak anyway, so it didn't really matter. A moment later, Lyle checked his watch and stood up.
It's nearly breakfast time, he said. You'd better get going. Shall we meet you later? Aaron asked. Yes.
He pulled a piece of paper out of his back pocket and unfolded it.
You've got races and relays with Shiprock this morning, and knowledge and nets at the harbour this afternoon. How about you hang around at Harbour Bay after that? I'll tell your teacher I've got a special assignment for you that only semi-mers can do.
Which isn't really very far from the truth, I pointed out.
No. Look, are you sure about this? I don't want...
Please, I said, stopping him. You couldn't stop me doing this, even if you tried, I said. We'll be fine. All of us. I'm going to bring Luenna home.
We'll see you later, Aaron said.
Lyle waved as we got up.
Thank you again, he whispered.
I smiled. No problem. And with that, we turned away and headed back across the road to join the others for breakfast. Aaron's fingers found mine, and I held his hand tightly.
How do you feel? He asked.
Fine. Honestly, I'm cool, I said. I wasn't going to let him see it, or he'd try to stop me. But the thought of what lay ahead was turning my insides to jelly. I mean, of course, I could hardly wait to get going. Magical adventures were pretty much my favourite things. But if I thought about it too much, which I was trying not to do, it was kind of ridiculously scary and dangerous as well.
"Wonder what's for breakfast," Aaron said. "My tummy's rumbling."
"Yeah, mine too," I said. And it was true. My stomach was turning round in so many circles it felt like a matted, knotted fishing net. But it had nothing to do with being hungry.
Chapter 14.
Hey, what do you think of this?
Mandy lifted the net she'd been working on and put it over her head.
It's my new shower cap. Does it suit me?
I laughed.
I don't think you'll be starting a new fashion just yet.
I held mine out in front of me.
What about mine? I'm thinking I could use it as a bag.
Mandy studied my netting.
As long as you don't mind losing everything you put in it, she said, placing her arm through one of the holes.
Okay, so maybe we're not the best net makers in the world, I admitted. Aaron and I had told Mandy and Shona everything earlier, and it was good to have a laugh and do something different, take my mind off things for a bit.
Right, Year 8, Miss Platt called as she looked around at our dismal efforts. I think we've all learned about as much as we are ever going to learn about making fishing nets.
She turned to Lyle, who was helping Tom and Maggie finish off their net.
Lyle, I think it's safe to say there won't be too much competition in the net-making industry for the time being.
Lyle stood up and smiled as he looked round at us.
"You've all done a great job," he said.
"Now then, how about some volunteers to help tidy things away?" Miss Platt asked.
A couple of girls put their hands up. Miss Platt nodded at them.
"Evie and Amanda, thank you. Could you fetch the boxes from the top of the beach and help put all the nets back in, please? Grab a friend each to help take the boxes back up to the house."
Lyle looked around the group.
"I could do with some more volunteers to help me attach some ropes back onto the jetties."
He looked over at me and pulled a "this is where you volunteer" kind of face at me.
"Maybe a couple of good swimmers."
"I'll do it,"
I burst out before anyone else could. Aaron quickly stuck his hand in the air.
"I'll help."
"Great."
Lyle beckoned us over.
"I'll only need you for 30 minutes or so. The rest of you can head back with Miss Platt. Hope you've had a good afternoon."
"They've had a lovely afternoon," Miss Platt replied. "What do we say, children?"
As the class shouted their thank yous to Lyle, Aaron and I made our way to the end of the jetty. We waited for the others to leave with the nets and boxes. Once they were gone, Lyle came over.
"Right," he said. "We've got half an hour. Let me tell you the plan."
Aaron and I huddled in close as Lyle spoke.
"I've done some more research," he said. "I've come up with 3 reasons why a ship might not be able to escape Atlantis, even if any of its crew or passengers know the route, as Luena does. The chances of it happening at all are so remote as to be almost non-existent. But the fact that Luena is a skilled navigator and that we've seen the ship makes me think that there is a tiny possibility that they are trying."
"Go on," Aaron said. "What are the 3 reasons?
1, they're already dead and it's too late."
His words made my insides jump like a flying fish. Before I could say anything, he went on.
"But it can't be that, or we wouldn't have seen the ship at all."
"Okay, what are the others?" I asked.
2 is that they're still alive, but there's something wrong with the ship that's preventing it from coming back.
"The torn sails," I said. "Could that be it?"
Lyle shook his head.
"It's not quite enough. That might be part of it, but it would need to be something to do with the engineering of the ship. Something that makes it impossible to drive at all, let alone navigate the treacherous path back from Atlantis. If it is this one, they've got 1 more day to fix it."
"So what's the 3rd? Aaron asked.
"Trying to take something of Atlantis with you."
"What kind of thing?" I asked. Lyle shrugged.
"I don't know. Could be a memento of some sort. It might even be something that's been picked up in Atlantis and brought onto the boat by accident. Remember, once you are there, you are surrounded by so much magic and beauty, you can't imagine ever wanting to be anywhere else. There would be many things you'd want to keep. Whatever it is, if it comes from Atlantis, the ship won't be able to leave while it's on board."
"Okay, so it's most likely to be either option 2 or 3 that we're talking about," Aaron said.
"I would think so. I hope so, anyway, with all my heart."
Lyle turned to me.
"But even if it is one of these, your job is extremely hard. If there is something wrong with the ship, you are unlikely to be much help. Not unless you have a degree in mechanical engineering that we don't know about."
I laughed.
"No, but at least I'd be able to let them know their time is running out and that they have to hurry. And if it's the 3rd, I can get them to search the ship and return anything that came from Atlantis. Either way, one thing we know for sure is that they stand a better chance of getting away with me than if I don't even try."
"It's a small window," Lyle said. "You'll have just over 12 hours. You should be able to come back on the ship with them. There won't be any problem with that. But if not, there is always the portal, when it opens again at dusk. Dusk is also the ship's last chance to escape. Emily, Are you sure you...
I'm doing it, I said firmly. What time do I go? Lyle's face was a mixture of gratitude and sadness.
I'll meet you early tomorrow. If we get together at 6 in the morning at Deep Blue Bay, that'll leave enough time to give you any final instructions before the slack tide.
Sounds good, I said, trying to keep my voice steady, so that neither of them would hear my nerves jangling about like broken shells on a rolling wave.
I found out some more about the portal, too, Lyle went on, about its location.
Tell me more.
There is disagreement on exactly how to find it, but it seems there are 2 possibilities. The first is that it's in the spot where the ship disappeared into the ground. We have to hope that those who support this theory are wrong.
Why is that?
Because that would be virtually impossible to find. The portal will only open for a matter of minutes, nowhere near long enough for you to burrow into the sand, even if you could find the exact spot that opened up to suck the ship through.
So what's the other theory? Aaron asked.
That the ship has a weak point.
A weak point? I repeated. You mean, like, in its construction or something?
Lyle shook his head.
A different kind of weak point. Those who argue this theory say that there will be one point on the ship where the connection is strongest. The place where your vision was clearest.
As Lyle spoke, I had no doubt where this point would be. The spot I'd seen in my mind ever since I'd been there. The spot where I'd almost felt as if I could reach through and be inside the ship myself. The porthole where I'd seen Luenna. Lyle had no need to explain further.
Those people are right, I said.
He nodded. He knew what I was talking about. Where I was talking about.
Yes, he said. I understand.
Where? Aaron asked. The porthole.
Yes, I know you mean the portal, but where are you saying it is?
I didn't say portal, I insisted. I said porthole. The porthole is the portal.
Oh, Aaron frowned. That's weird.
Yeah. Before Aaron and I got too carried away with the difference between portholes and portals, Lyle went on.
There are 2 more things.
He dug around in his pocket and pulled out some folded sheets of paper.
I managed to get the passenger list, he said, as he opened out the sheets and flattened them on his knee. Wow, how did you do that? Aaron asked. You have all sorts of contacts in my line of work.
Lyle replied lightly. Then he passed me the papers. They were a random mix of photos and text.
There were 6 members of crew and 12 passengers, he went on. I've got photos of them all for you. Try to memorize their faces before you go. It'll help you to find them more quickly once you get there.
If I get there.
There are way more photos than that, Aaron said.
I know. The rest are of their families. Why do I need photos of their families? I asked.
You don't. They do. The photos will help them to remember.
Remember their families? Aaron asked.
Surely they won't have forgotten them in 5 days.
It's not 5 days for them. It's already been 6 months, Lyle reminded him.
And by the time Emily gets to them, it will be even more than that. And it's not just about the length of time. It's about the magic that Atlantis exerts. It makes you forget. It forces thoughts of your old life out of your mind. Makes you believe that Atlantis is all you want, all you've ever known.
So the photos are to remind them of their old lives, I said.
Their real lives, Lyle corrected me. You can tell them all you like. But they won't believe you until they feel it for themselves. It has to be something that they can hold or see. The photos are essential.
He reached into his pocket again,
This time, he brought out a mini snow globe. He passed the globe to me. The flakes twinkled and fell as he held it out. As they landed, I could see why he'd given it to me. Inside it was a photo, the same as the one in Lyle's house, him and Luenna together, smiling on their wedding day. I took the snow globe from him. He didn't need to explain what that was for.
"Luenna will remember you,"
Aaron said. I thought about her eyes, her desperation. "She does remember you," I added. Before Lyle could reply, we heard shouting behind us and all turned to look. Some of the kids from Brightport were coming back down to the harbour.
"We'd better be getting back," Aaron said.
Lyle stopped us.
"Emily, one final thing. You must remember that you are not immune to the powers and magic of Atlantis. Although you'll only be there for 12 hours, even that will be long enough for you to start forgetting why you are there, or even where you have come from. You will start to forget almost as soon as you arrive. You have to stay strong."
At that, Aaron pulled up his sleeve and started fiddling with a chain on his wrist. I'd seen it before. He told me his dad had given it to him before he died. Aaron took it off.
"Hold out your arm,"
he said to me. As I did, he closed the chain around my wrist and shut the clasp firmly.
"This will remind you of me and of home," he said.
Then he kissed my wrist. "Stop being so nice. Stop. Don't. You'll make me..."
"Okay. You'd better go,"
Lyle broke into my thoughts.
"Go and join the others. Looks like it's free time."
I glanced behind me to see my classmates running down to the water's edge in shorts and t-shirts. For a brief second, I envied them their innocence, their ignorance of all this.
"What will we tell Miss Platt tomorrow?"
Aaron asked. "Just say I'm spending the day with Shiprock," I suggested.
"I don't want to lie to your teachers,"
Lyle said.
"Then don't," Aaron suggested. "I will. Mandy and I will sort it."
Lyle held his hands up in a mini surrender.
"Okay. Look, I'll leave that side of it with you. I just..."
"It's covered," I said firmly, before he tried to talk me out of it again. We started heading back up the beach. "See you tomorrow," I said to Lyle, as we parted company at the top.
"I can't thank you enough," Lyle replied.
And with that, he turned away. A moment later, he was gone. We watched him walk away.
"Come on," Aaron said. "Let's join the rest of the class and pretend none of this is happening for a bit. What do you reckon?"
As I looked over, I could see Mandy had come down with the others. She waved over at us. Maybe we could go and get Shona too. The four of us could hang out and play in the water for a bit before the sun set. An evening of fun and messing about with my friends, of forgetting about ships and lost people and Atlantis and all of it. "I reckon that sounds like a plan," I said, taking off my shoes and starting to run. "Race you to the water's edge!" It's amazing how quickly 6 o'clock in the morning can come around when you're having fun. Although, to be honest, I wasn't sure that fun was the right word to describe my feelings. Once we'd filled them in on everything, Aaron, Mandy, Shona and I spent all evening together, playing in the water, chasing and racing and diving and laughing together. The others laughed and smiled a lot. I did the same. But on the inside, I was busy wondering if this was the last evening I would ever have like this. Not just with them. With everyone. I thought about Mum and Dad. As far as they were concerned, I was on a nice little geography field trip. What if I never came home? What if I never saw them again? What if... No, I couldn't think like that. If I did, I would never go, and I had to. I owed it to all the people stuck in Atlantis on Prosperous II. I'd spent all night reading about them and trying to memorize their faces. And now, after a few restless hours' sleep, It was Wednesday morning, and we were heading down to the sea in the semi-darkness.
"Hey, stop it,"
Aaron scolded me.
"What?"
"Thinking. I can hear you, you know."
"You can..." Aaron slung an arm over my shoulder.
"Relax. I don't mean literally. I just mean I can imagine what you're thinking. You're going to be great. Everything will be fine."
"Hey, guys!" Mandy was running down the road towards us. I pulled away from Aaron. "What are you doing? It's really early," I said as Mandy caught us up. "I've come to wish you good luck." She shuffled from foot to foot. "Just look after yourself," she said. "I'll be so mad at you if you don't come back." I pulled her towards me for a hug. "Thanks, Mandy. Hey, I'll be back before you know it." She hugged me back for a second, then drew away. "You better had be, fish girl. The rest of this week will be rubbish if I haven't got my best friend with me." Mandy stopped. She stammered. "I know you've got other best friends. I just meant..." I stopped her.
"I know," I said. "You're one of my best friends too."
Mandy pulled a weird scowl, which I guessed was an attempt to hide a smile.
"Right," she said, shoving her hands in her pockets. "Cool. Okay, I'll let you go. See you tonight, huh?"
"You bet," I told her. Aaron and I walked down to Deep Blue Bay in silence. There weren't many words that could fill the big blank question mark we were walking into. Lyle was already there. So was Shona, her tail flipping nervously from side to side so much that she was almost dancing on the surface of the water.
"I wasn't going to let you go off and do something this dangerous without coming to see you off," she said.
We dropped into the water to join her. As my legs fizzled and tingled and my tail formed, I glanced at Lyle. His body had done the same thing. It was weird seeing him as a merman. It reminded me how little we knew about him, about this place, about any of this. A fleeting dart of fear stabbed through my body. What was I doing?
"Last chance to change your mind," Lyle said,
as if I'd uttered my thoughts out loud. I pictured Luenna, pictured the ship, and even though it made me feel a little guilty to think it, I realized I was excited about my adventure. Terrified, yes, that too, of course, but I couldn't help part of me buzzing with adrenaline at the thought of visiting such a magical and mysterious place as Atlantis.
"I'm not changing my mind," I said firmly.
Lyle nodded.
"You've got everything?"
I patted my jacket pocket. It would stay on me all the time, and I had the papers and the snow globe Lyle had given me in one of Miss Platt's waterproof bags.
"And you've got my chain?"
Aaron checked. I held up my wrist to show him that too.
"Okay, let's go," said Lyle. "I'll swim out to the edge of the bay with you."
We swam away from the island together. Out of the bay, out towards the channel, towards the slack tide, the dawn, the ship, towards Atlantis.
Chapter 15. We were in the channel, the same place I'd seen the ship before. I checked my watch. 6:35 a.m. We had 5 minutes till high tide.
"Good luck, Emily," Lyle said. "You will never know how grateful I am to you for this."
I nodded a reply to him. I didn't try to say anything. Then Shona pulled me into a hug.
"Please, please be careful," she said.
"Course I will," I assured her.
"If anyone can do this, you can. Just get the job done and come home safely."
"I will, I promise," I said, wishing I could believe the words as firmly as I said them. As she let go of me, she started fiddling with a starfish brooch pinned on her top.
"Here, take this," she said,
unclipping it and holding it out to me.
"What's that for?" I asked, taking the brooch from her.
"It's a backup, in case anything happens to Aaron's chain," she said. "Pin it on your clothes somewhere you can easily see it."
I pinned the starfish on my top, near my shoulder, and fastened it tight.
"Thank you,"
I said, giving her one last hug.
"Thank you," she said, "for being so swishy you make me proud to be your best friend."
Shona let go of me and joined Lyle as Aaron came over. He didn't say anything, just opened his arms. I swam into them, and he held me tightly. So tightly, I wanted to stay there forever and not do any of this. Aaron pulled away and held both of my hands in his.
"Good luck," he said. "I'll be thinking about you every second."
"Me too," I said.
"No, don't think about me. Think about what you're there to do, and look after yourself. If anything happens to you..."
"Nothing's going to happen to me," I said. "I'll be fine."
Aaron lifted my hand, the one with his chain on it, and kissed my wrist.
"Stop it. Stop it. You're being too nice."
I pulled away from Aaron so sharply he jumped back.
"What?"
he asked. I glanced at my watch again. 6:39 a.m. Nearly time. "I have to go. The ship is going to be here in 2 minutes." With that, before anyone had the chance to say anything else or feel anything else, I flicked my tail, spun round, and headed towards the exact spot I'd been in when I'd seen the ship with Shona. 6:41 a.m. The movement of the sea slowed to a halt. Fish stopped swimming. The channel seemed to darken as everything stilled. But no ship. 6:42 a.m.
"Can you see anything?" Shona asked.
"Not yet." I turned to Aaron. "Aaron, can you see it?"
He shook his head.
"It's not here."
6:43 a.m. 3 minutes to dawn, when the portal would open. But if there was no ship, there'd be no portal either. Were we too late? Had the ship gone for good? Wait, I could just about see something. A faint shimmer. An outline. The ship! It was here!
"Can you see it?" I cried.
"No,"
Aaron replied. Of course he couldn't. Lyle had said that if they were no longer trying to get back, the ship would only now be visible if you had 4 in-between states, which meant I'd be the only one who could see it.
"Can you see it?"
Aaron asked. The ship was growing more visible. It still looked more like a hologram than anything real, but it was here, and it was getting stronger with every passing second.
"Just about," I said.
6:44 a.m. 2 minutes to go. 100 panicked thoughts came into my head. What if I couldn't find the portal? What if I got stuck going through? What if I couldn't get back? What if I never saw Aaron again? The final thought was like an electric shock to my brain, reminding me of what I had to do. The last thing I could afford right now was to think thoughts like that. It was dangerous. It could make me feel things that I mustn't feel. Not yet. I had to stay in between. I had to stay focused.
"I'm going to go to Luena's window," I said. "I need to be ready when the portal opens."
"I'll swim with you,"
Aaron replied.
"I'll be praying and wishing and sending you every bit of luck in the world,"
Lyle added.
"Emily,"
Shona's voice was muffled.
"I don't know if you can still hear me, but if you can, good luck. I know you'll do a swishy job."
I laughed to myself. Swishy. Only Shona could describe something like this as swishy. She could always make me smile. I looked around me. I could barely see her, but I knew she was there.
"Thank you,"
I called back into the silent stillness of the ocean. Aaron was beside me.
Come on, he said. We need to go.
One behind the other, we made our way along the channel. As we swam, the ship came and went, fading practically to a see-through image, then returning almost as strongly as the last time I'd seen it.
Can you still not see it?
I called back to Aaron.
No, but it doesn't matter. All that matters is that you can.
We were running out of time. My link with the ship was weakening by the second, and the portal still wasn't due to open. I checked my watch as we swam alongside the ship's hull. 6:45 a.m. One more minute. We passed window after window. At each one, I glanced into the blackness within as I swam by. And then we were there. Halfway along the ship's hull, the porthole where I'd seen Luena. I stopped swimming and peered into the darkness. Nothing. I checked around the frame. I'd noticed a bit of scuffed paint just above the glass last time I was here. Yes, it was still there. This was definitely the right one.
It's 6:46, Aaron said. Are you ready?
My heart thumped like a ship's engine. I think so. We waited. The sea was so still it felt like air. The darkness on the other side of the glass was so black it looked like night. The ship was weakening by the second.
What do I do? I asked. How do I make the portal appear?
I don't know. Maybe...
Aaron began. Wait! I stopped him. Something was changing. Above us, I saw a faint twinkle of light. Dawn was breaking. The sun was rising. And then I saw it. The window. The porthole. The portal.
It's here, I whispered.
The glass was shimmering and shining. First a deep purple, then blue, then mauve, pink, yellow, green. The porthole was exploding with colour. It was as if a firework display was going on behind it.
You need to go, Aaron said, before it's too late. We don't know how long you've got.
He was right. I flicked my tail and slithered over to the porthole. Swimming towards the colours, my fear disappeared. As the glass in the porthole melted away, so did my worries. All that was there was colour, light, and a space just large enough to swim through. Not only that, but it was a space that I wanted to swim through. It was as if I craved it, as if I needed it. It reminded me of the first time I'd gone into the water in the school swimming lesson. It was that same sensation of being lured by something that scared me, but something I couldn't resist. I stopped in front of the porthole.
Good luck, Emily,
I heard faintly, and I turned to say goodbye to Aaron, but he was already starting to vanish.
I'll see you soon, I called back.
And then I turned to the ship and swam right up to the porthole. A moment's hesitation. And I swam into the colours, into the light, through the porthole that was now a portal. As I swam, my body felt as if it were moving through an electric current. Every nerve ending jangled and danced and fizzed and sparked with energy. It was almost enough to make me stop and turn back. Almost pain. But then I remembered why I was doing this, and I swam on. The feeling grew stronger. The lights that had looked so inviting seemed to have turned into a monstrous kind of energy. It felt as if they were attacking me, biting my skin, snapping at my tail, scratching my face. No, I couldn't do it. I couldn't even remember why I was doing it. The sensation was too much. I couldn't bear it. I tried to turn back, but there was no space. The porthole had become a capsule, with me and the vicious lights battling and squirming inside it.
Help! I screamed. I want to get out!
But there was no one to hear me. I pushed and kicked with my tail, lashed out with my arms. The light spun me around, beat me against the sides of the capsule, flung me inside out, as if I were caught in the spin cycle of a washing machine.
No, no, no!
I couldn't take it any more. I didn't have any fight left. I wasn't going to get through. And then I remembered what I was there for. I wasn't doing this for fun, and I wasn't doing it for myself. I was doing it for Lyle and for Lowenna. The thought of her frightened eyes and Lyle's sad face spurred me on. I gathered all the strength I had, visualized my tail turning into a propeller and my arms into the strongest fins in the world, and gave it one last push. Something changed. Gradually, the energy began to feel a little less hostile. The light dimmed a tiny bit. It was all I needed to encourage me. I swam as hard as I could, working my arms like a windmill. And then, when I was on the verge of giving up out of sheer exhaustion, the tingling feeling in my body faded. The colours calmed to soft pastel shades. My tail stopped feeling as if it were under attack from 100 biting sharks. The lights dimmed to a warm glow, and then disappeared completely. I was through. I was inside the ship. I was in darkness. Emily. The voice was a whisper, so soft I could almost have imagined it. I turned back to face the way I'd come in. The shimmering colours had gone, as if they'd never existed. All I could see was an ordinary porthole, the same one through which I'd seen Lowenna. Only this time, I was on the inside.
Chapter 16. I guess you could sum up my feelings at that point in two words: sheer panic. I mean, what else could I logically feel? I had just swum through a window that wasn't a window, through something that felt like a live meteor shower, into a cabin that was in complete darkness, on a ship that kind of existed but not, in the traditional sense of the word, exist, and I was now completely alone with the possibility that I might be stuck here forever. Sheer panic felt like a supremely sensible thing to feel. Treading water in the dark, I pulled my thoughts into line. I didn't have long and couldn't afford to waste any time. I pulled up my sleeve and set a countdown timer on my watch. I had 12 hours. Then I realized something. Even though I was treading water, the cabin wasn't completely underwater. I swam upwards, poked my head out, and shook the water out of my hair. The cabin was half submerged and lying on a tilt. How was it only half underwater when Aaron and I had been swimming way down in the sea to get to it? I had the feeling this was only the first of many questions I would be asking myself over the next 12 hours. Pulling down my sleeve, I tried to steady my thoughts. On an impulse, I pulled up my other sleeve. Aaron's chain. I touched it, tracing the delicate links with my fingers. The chain would keep me safe, remind me what I was here to do, and what I was going back to. I checked the timer on my watch. 11:57. 3 minutes gone already. It was time to get going. I flicked my tail and silently glided across the dark cabin and towards the door which led me out into a long corridor. I swam quickly along the passage and soon came to a hallway. Stairs led up and down. Which way? I swam to a picture on the wall. It was a map of the ship. A "You are here" arrow pointed to a spot in the middle of the ship. Deck 3. There were 2 decks below me and 2 above. According to the picture, I was on the deck with the passenger cabins. The one below me had the crew's quarters and a reception area. Below that was a deck for the ship's engines and cargo. The level above me housed a dining room, a shop, and a panoramic lounge. Above that was the captain's quarters at the front and the shiny deck where I had seen people walking about at the back.
I swam halfway up the staircase, which was as high as the water went. I sat on a step and waited for my tail to stop flapping, stop tingling, and return to legs. Then, as quietly and as steadily as I could, given that the whole ship was on a steep slope, I gripped the handrail and climbed the staircase to the fourth deck. I made my way along the corridor towards the small shop. Hello? I stepped gingerly into the shop and looked around. Empty. One wall was lined with shelves full of keyrings and coasters with a picture of the ship and the words Prosperous 2 on the side. They had all slipped to the ends of the shelves, which were sloping downwards with the ship's tilt. The shop had the feel of a place that had been trashed and then completely forgotten about. Behind the counter, pencils and a bowl of magnets lay on the floor. A rail held T-shirts that had all slipped down to one end. I made my way to the dining room. Tables were strewn with forgotten plates and bowls. Coffee machines had unwashed cups and saucers beside them. I picked up one of the cups. Something that looked like cotton wool appeared to be growing in the bottom of it. The place was completely abandoned. Where was everyone? A door behind the coffee machine was half open. I approached it cautiously. Pushing through the door, I called out again. Hello? Anyone around? This was starting to get creepy. Okay, it was way beyond starting to get creepy. It was full-on, out-and-out, brain-mashingly spooky. What had happened to Luenna, to all of the passengers and crew? I checked the lounge at the front. Same thing, completely empty. Corridors, empty. Reception area, deserted. The ship was a ghost town. Finally, I climbed up to the top deck. I pushed open a heavy glass door and went outside. The first thing to hit me was the feeling of the air against my skin. Warm, soothing, gentle. It was like... like what? I'd never felt anything like it before. As smooth as melted caramel. As warm as a summer's day. As comforting as a blanket. It instantly soothed my worries. There was no one out here either. But I no longer minded all that much. In fact, I was struggling to remember who I was looking for. Ahead of me, there was a wooden changing hut and a small pool. It looked like a hot tub, although the water was still and had a layer of light green slime around the edges. Like everything else, it had clearly been neglected for months. I slid along the downward sloping deck to the edge of the ship and a couple of deck chairs. Opening the nearest one out into full recline, I sat on it. I could just lie here and enjoy the heat and the lovely feeling. The sun was so warm, so beautiful. I had never felt so at peace, so calm, so happy. I could stay here forever. I lay down, rolled up my sleeves to enjoy the sunshine and... wait, what was that on my arm? The chain from Aaron, my boyfriend. I sat bolt upright. What was I even thinking? I wasn't here to sunbathe. I was here to find Luenna and all the others. How had I let myself forget? Was Atlantis working its magic on me already? I got out of the chair and clung to the railings, looking out. All I could see was blue, the bluest blue I'd ever seen. The clearest sky, stretching down towards the ocean, and blending with it so seamlessly, it was hard to tell where the sky ended and the sea began. I turned away and climbed up the sloping boards to the opposite deck. For a moment, the sun blinded me. It was so bright I had to shield my eyes. Using my hands as a visor, I eventually managed to see what lay ahead. A beautiful, sparkling, shimmering blue bay. Behind it, an island. A palm-fringed beach in front of me that looked like a postcard from the world's most exclusive paradise. Behind that, bridges, streams, a waterfall running down to a river beside the beach. Sparkling as if it were filled with a million silver coins. Behind that again, buildings that seemed to climb up and down hills all across the island. Houses in 100 different pastel colours, on hills so green they looked as if they'd been coloured in with the brightest felt tips in the world. I swallowed as I stared across at the island. Suddenly, all I wanted was to get there, to be there, be part of it. I couldn't wait to explore every inch. And that was when I knew for sure. I wasn't just looking at any old island. I was looking at Atlantis. I slipped down to the lower side of the ship and dived into the blue sea. Swimming around the ship, I made my way towards Atlantis. The sea was turquoise and so clear that the ocean floor looked as if it was in high definition. Close up, the sand on the beach looked as soft and white as caster sugar. A single palm tree reached out from each end of the beach, almost horizontal, as if they wanted to dip their leaves in the ocean. A long jetty stretched out from the soft white beach right into the sea. I pulled myself out of the water and sat on the end of the jetty, shaking myself dry and watching as my tail slipped gradually away and my legs returned. As I walked up the jetty towards the beach, two people padded over to greet me. A man and a woman, one on either side of the jetty. They wore identical garlands of multicoloured flowers around their necks and beamed with identical smiles. "Welcome," the woman said, reaching out to hug me tightly, like I was a long-lost friend. The man handed me his garland.
"We are so pleased to have you join us," he said, placing the flowers over my head. "We hope you have a delightful stay. Make yourself at home. Enjoy."
The woman took my hand, and both of them walked across the sand with me. My feet melted into it. It was like walking on marshmallows. The woman stopped and reached down to a basket in the sand. Where had that come from? She held it out to me.
"Here," she said. "Help yourself."
I stared into the basket. It was full of pink and white marshmallows. Whoa! How had that happened? I looked at the woman.
"Go on," she laughed. "They're for you."
I dug my hand into the basket and pulled out a handful. As I tasted them, I almost fainted from pleasure. They were the sweetest, softest things I had ever eaten in my life.
"Thank you," I mumbled, my mouth half full of marshmallow.
She laughed again. Then she pointed away from the beach.
"See that bridge in front of you? Take it into the city," she said. "You will find much to enjoy. If you have any questions, there are plenty of people around to help you find answers."
The bridge led across a river that ran with the clearest water I'd ever seen. As the water flowed, it twinkled in the sunlight, looking as if it were sprinkled with diamonds.
"Thank you," I said.
I couldn't wait to go and explore. The man was rummaging around in another basket.
"Here," he said. "A welcome gift."
"You've already given me a garland and a load of marshmallows," I laughed. "I loved these people."
The man waved off my reply.
"A proper gift," he said,
pulling out a bracelet from the basket. A line of tiny bright diamonds linked by the most delicate gold chain I'd ever seen.
"Like it?"
he asked.
"I love it," I gasped.
It was the prettiest thing I'd ever seen in my life. I wanted to wear it always, show it to who? I couldn't think of anyone I'd show it to, couldn't remember anyone's names. Hold on, I'd show it to all the people I met on this beautiful island. I would get a feathery top, just like the woman was wearing, and wear my beautiful new bracelet. I'd smile and laugh and dance and live here forever, the happiest girl alive.
"Hold your hand out,"
the man said, undoing the clasp. I held out my arm. No, wait, not that one. I had a watch on it. I pulled up my other sleeve, held out my arm, and saw Aaron's chain. No, it had happened again. I'd forgotten where I was, what I was here for. I glanced at the man and woman, both still beaming at me. Didn't they know where they were, where we were, what this place was? I pulled down my sleeve again. Actually, I think I'll have a little look round first, I stammered. See what else there is before I choose what to buy. The woman laughed out loud.
We're not selling, dear, she said. There are no shops here, only gifts.
I swallowed. I'll just take a walk first, if that's okay, I mumbled. The man put the bracelet into my palm and closed my fingers over it.
Take it anyway, he said. All we want is to make you happy.
I took the bracelet and fastened it on next to my watch. Okay, thank you, I muttered. It was beautiful. I suppose there was no harm in keeping it. The woman touched my arm. Her hand was gentle and soft. It calmed my heart rate down a little.
Don't worry, she said. You'll be fine. We'll look after you.
I tried to smile at her, but my mouth felt frozen on my face, as if it might crack and splinter into pieces. Okay, thanks, I stammered eventually, and then I made my way towards the bridge. I could see people on the other side of it. Maybe the people I'd come to find. I had to reach them. I had to keep on remembering why I was here. I checked my timer. 11:08. I had just over 11 hours left. It was time I stepped it up a gear. Nearly an hour had passed already, and I had barely started. As I crossed the bridge, I scanned the other side. A narrow, cobbled street lined with multicoloured buildings ran up a hill and disappeared around a corner. Every building was a different colour and shape. Pastel pink next to vivid yellow. Thin, tall turrets beside round houses with feathery chimneys. They were so quirky and cute. They reminded me of pictures in a kid's storybook. I stepped off the bridge and onto the cobbles. As I did, I heard someone begin to sing a tune. It was beautiful, haunting. It made me want to cry and laugh all at the same time. I stopped walking and looked round. Singing stopped. Huh? Where had it come from? Where had it gone? There were a few people in the street, all walking along casually in groups of two or three, all smiling and chatting with each other. No one was singing. I shook my head and carried on walking. As I did, the song began again, which was when I realized it was coming from the cobbles. As I walked, the ground shone with soft lights and played its music. The ground was singing to me. I quickly brought my wrist to my face. Aaron's chain. Look at it. I had to remember why I was here before I got lost in the magic again. Back on track, I carried on walking, scanning the faces of everyone I passed. I didn't recognize anyone yet. I followed the cobbled street round a corner. In front of me, a sky-blue gate led to another road. The gate smelled of fresh paint, one of my favourite smells. I leaned into the gate and closed my eyes for a moment. That smell always made me happy, made me forget my worries. Wait! Atlantis was making me forget. Again! I looked down at myself, grabbed the brooch from Shona, and stared at it for a moment, just long enough to remember. Then I shook myself and pushed the gate open. On the other side was a field. And then the strangest thing happened. I walked through the gate and turned to close it behind me. As I did, I looked back and saw the cobbled street had vanished. In its place lay a green field full of white and yellow flowers, all blowing gently in the wind as if a million daisies were waving me on. How had that happened? It didn't matter how it had happened. I had to move on. Closing the gate, I turned back round to the new field. But the field had gone. Now I was looking at a large, busy ice rink. In fact, I wasn't just looking at it.
I was standing in the middle of it, on skates. Crowds of smiling people surrounded me, skating in circles, holding hands, laughing together.